Sign up to The Economist for in-depth curated expert analysis of world events and topics ranging from business and culture to science and technology. You'll get the weekly digital edition, online-only articles, curated newsletters on politics, the markets, science, culture and China, and full access to The Economist Podcast Plus. The Economist is independent journalism for independent thinking. Go to economist.com and get your first month free.
Welcome to Puto Politics, the political podcast of the San Antonio Express News. I'm Gilbert Garcia, opinion writer and columnist, and I'm joined by
Carrie Clark, columnist, editorial board.
Nancy Pereira Johnson, deputy editorial board editor.
Metro editor Greg Jefferson.
And we're going to start out talking about city council. Last week, after three council members had been censured over a period of 15 months, city council adopted a code of conduct. It's the first time they've ever done this.
So no more bad behavior.
That's right. Things are going to be smooth.
We are done. Yeah. No more WDW cases. There we go.
So I think we're done now. I think we've kind of, everything's looking good.
Check that off the list. We're good.
That's all we ever needed. I mean, really, we probably never had any corruption or anything. So, Greg, what is in this code of conduct and why? And I think it's because of what happened with the previous censures that they decided.
There is, yeah. So, I mean, let's start with kind of the reason. And council and Mayor Ron Nuremberg won't really say that this is the reason, but this is more or less the reason. In the space of 15 months, you had three council members censured in various ways by the city council. And there were really no guidelines. A lot of it, each one was an ad hoc decision by council to do something to, you know, address what they viewed as reprehensible behavior. Mm-hmm. So we had, you know, in Councilman Mario Bravo's case, this was, you know, a verbal attack on a colleague. And then two drunken driving charges against sitting council members from the same district, actually, Clayton Perry and Mark White. So that's kind of the backdrop of what happened last week, which was the adoption of a code of conduct that included didn't say, hey, by the way, don't drink and drive. that wasn't actually part of the conduct that was kind of illegalized. But you cannot have intimate relationships with your staff. That's one of them.
Okay, sexual relationship. I'm going to break these down one by one. This one was interesting to me. And correct me if I'm misinterpreting this. But I think what they're saying is you can't have intimate relationships with a staff member. Unless it happened before. Started before you were on council or before they were on staff. Yeah. So in other words, it's okay if you already have a relationship going with somebody and you decide, I'm going to appoint them to a staff member.
That's right. That's okay. Right. And mm-hmm. you also have to tell the city attorney and city manager. Although it wasn't clear to me if you have to tell them both or just one of them. Presumably Eric Walsh, the city manager, would tell the city attorney and vice versa. That was one of the rules. And then it got weirdly specific in a couple of cases. You can't call up a third party during an executive session. These are always behind closed doors where they, you know, city council discusses sensitive legal, legal issues, economic development projects in the works, things like that.
Don't get the advice from lobbyists.
You can't call up your favorite lobbyist during the meeting and share what you've just been told or anybody else, any third party.
Is it your sense from covering council over the years that this is actually an issue? Yeah,
there's
the problem.
There's this. There's this famous story. The council member is still alive, so I won't. I won't go into it, but
the initials are.
This was like 15 years ago in an executive council meeting. She turned on her phone, put it down on the table so her favorite developer could.
I think I know. Listen, who this
yeah,
is.
I think yeah, like any
15 this, years ago.
She, well, it was actually longer, but yeah, and he was the person on the other end was very upset because she hadn't charged her phone sufficiently and it died right in the middle of the executive session. So anyway, so there was that, and then a related one that says in emails regarding city business, you can't blind copy a third party, and that is you can't send out an email with a recipient that's unknown to the receivers of the email. And it's like, in cases like that, it just makes you wonder who's doing this right now, because these seem very, yeah, these are so specific. So yeah. So specific. And I know they're, you know, these matters are kind of problems over time, but like, who's doing it now? And by the way, who's sleeping with their chief of staff?
There's also something about no profanity, which was interesting because, I mean, I'd have to go back, but I mean, I think that there, and this includes social media, and we've had some council members, I think particularly the younger ones, I think it's fair to say.
Particularly Jalen McKee Rodriguez.
Okay.
Like I think even during the council meeting, he said, I'm not going to stop. I think he called them spicy tweets. He's not going to stop.
He gets spicy tweets.
But he gets kind of salty, but I don't know about profanity. I'm not really not sure.
With McKee Rodriguez, I can't think of anything he's tweeted that would run afoul of that.
But it wasn't just profanity. It's also, wasn't it like disrespectful? Or
right, right. Yeah.
It's very gray in some of those areas.
Well,
it is very gray.
Look, we've got a lot of politicians at pretty high levels, you know, dropping F-bombs in public and stuff like that. So, I mean, I don't know how strict you're going
to... Yeah, I mean...
If you're making a speech somewhere and you just...
How far can you go in policing decorum?
Yeah.
If it falls short of, disrespecting or threatening a council member or somebody, you know, a member of the public... City staff, that's unclear. We don't know. And the code of conduct doesn't give you any guidance. Mm-mm.
And I think I like that there's a code of conduct because it actually gives them, and I think one of the council members actually said this in the article that you all wrote on the news side, is that it gives them a gauge. I think it's Adriana Rocha. Adriana Rocha Garcia, who said it gives them a gauge and tells them clearly what is off limits, what they can and can't do kind of thing, and gives them guardrails basically, which I think is great, but it does have a lot of gray language in there as well. It doesn't touch the DWI right, or it doesn't even imply any of that, which is one of the biggest problems there.
Right.
And I mean, I think, like, for instance, I think it was Thursday or Friday, and Jalen McKee, he did not put this tweet together, but he retweeted someone, and it was Manny's face on a milk carton, and like, basically, where is he? And then he just said, I don't know if he put LMAO or whatever, and just, you know, laughed at it. So would that be, I mean, is that, would that fall in there? Would it be disrespectful or, you know, it's...
Well,
it's,
we'll see if Manny Pelias presses the case for a century.
Right.
And that gets,
it's silly though. It's like a tit for tat kind of thing.
Well, that gets to how this is going to be implemented.
I would think it wouldn't be. But.
Because a council member will have to file a complaint and this is submitted to the city manager and city attorney, right?
Right.
And so they have to decide if it's serious.
And in fact, Terry Castillo and Jalen McKee Rodriguez, they were concerned that the code of conduct could be wielded as a weapon. I mean, if you have, you know, somebody you consider an enemy on council, go after him through this process.
This is a great point because I found myself thinking when thinking about this issue, about a case like 2019 with Greg Broadhouse. He's running for mayor. He's a city council member. Right. One of our colleagues at the time, Brian Chasnoff, wrote a story about a domestic violence incident. It was a case that had been expunged. But how would that fall? Greg Broadhouse had some enemies on the city council at the time. He's running for mayor.
One of them was the mayor.
one was the mayor. And he's got this controversy about this. It's still kind of an unresolved issue. I mean, he's kind of suggesting at the time that this maybe isn't really even a legitimate document.
That's
later,
right.
after the election, he admits that this incident happened. Would it have been possible in that situation for somebody on the council to say, I don't like this guy. We got this story that's kind of troubling, but we don't really know what to make of it. I'm going to file something.
Possible, yeah.
Yeah.
Even though it was older.
Even if it was pre-city.
I'm not sure about that. I think through the provisions of the code of conduct, I'm not sure
it's
that
about
that's
your
allowable.
Conduct on council.
Yeah.
It is. Exactly. Interesting, funny that you have, I mean, I think for the most part, it's always good to codify, decorum and find some way to enforce things, but it's kind of funny that you do have to put down in writing that you cannot sleep with this. Right. It's like Seinfeld when George Costanza was having an affair with the cleaning lady. Right,
is that wrong? I did not know that.
Where's the law? I mean, that's the thing. Like, I too think it's a good idea. I think having a code of conduct is, is it truly going to end bad behavior among council members? No, but we're in an era where, there's very little sense of decorum in our politics. It's getting more brutish. It's getting more, just more, aggressive. Mm-hmm. I think, there's nothing wrong with saying, kind of staking out this turf and saying, okay, look, we're not going to do this as a council. This is like, these are the things we consider, beyond the pale, and they're not allowable. However, at the end of it, the remedies for these, like if you run afoul of the code of conduct, it's the same old remedy, which is nothing really. It's the same, mm-hmm. you can.
We disapprove.
That's right. Yeah.
I thought the story, Megan Rodriguez's story on it was excellent in the way that she just explained mm-hmm. that. Well, it was one line in particular about, but basically just talking about how it's so subjective.
Yeah.
And then the answers from the city attorney and it's everyone, mm-hmm. it's no one really knew. We just have to wait until it happens.
Right.
I think I might have missed this, but who wrote them? Who decided who was in there?
Oh,
Versus
staff written, but Adriana Rocha Garcia, she's been mm-hmm. calling for this. I think she probably had a lot of input.
Okay.
But yeah, this was drafted by staff, as far as I know. And it's worth pointing out, I don't think this was much of an issue during the council debate last week. But there is, you're also, you have to take into consideration that this is a council manager form of government where the city manager is effectively the CEO. They, mm-hmm. the person oversees the operations of the city. City council, their responsibility is to hire and fire the city manager and to set policy. There's a real division here. Mm. And this enforcing this code of conduct means handing a lot of power to the city manager.
True.
And the city attorney under him. But that didn't seem to be much of an issue. It would have been for me.
Yeah.
Because I'm a big believer in the separation of powers. And this does give, at least within this process, a lot of power to Eric Walsh and Andy Segovia, the city attorney.
It will be tricky implementing it. And as we've said, it's very subjective. I can see the benefit in saying we are just going to place some parameters around what we think is acceptable and what is not acceptable. And maybe just getting people in the council to think a little bit about that. Because maybe, as you said, we're in this climate now where people maybe don't think too mm-hmm. much about civility in mm-hmm. politics. But it was interesting that you not only had Terry Castillo and Jalen McKee Rodriguez on the council, but also former council member Mario Bravo, who was subjected to this, 14, 15 months ago. Mm-hmm. And he came and spoke to the council. And mm-hmm. I think what he expressed was probably similar to what the two objecting council members expressed, which was, leave it up to the voters. We don't want the council to be the judge and jury on this. Uh-huh. Voters every 2 years they get to decide mm-hmm. if something bothers them or not. And I think it was also a due process issue because I think under this, they will get to make a statement. I don't even remember him getting a chance to speak at all.
No, he didn't. And that was one of his,
which I think was probably wrong.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think he was clearly, that still stung for him. I mean, he broached that Thursday when he addressed, council. Yeah. He didn't have a chance to address council or the public. And he feels like, with Clayton Perry and Mark White, they were given at least a chance to address council maybe after the vote was taken. And he, he said, I think his point was clearly there's no, it's kind of all over the place. Mm-hmm. There were no standards. He felt probably like he should have been given a chance to at least air his side of the story. He wasn't, that didn't happen. And, he thought it was unfair and that's what he wanted to address.
So under this new code of conduct, the person who's subjected to the complaint will not be able to get in, it, be part of the debate, but can make a statement.
Yeah, yeah. Afterwards, and they're obviously they can't. You know, they have to recuse themselves from the vote. Yeah.
Right. Wanted to move on to the issue of how Texas handles its primary system. Texas is one of 16 states that has what's called an open primary, meaning that people, if you're an eligible voter, you can vote in the Republican or Democratic primary. You know, you can from one election cycle to another, you can switch. And people, because we don't have people when they register to vote, don't register as Republicans or Democrats. And the issue of the open primary system, I think, is getting more attention this year, particularly because on the Republican side, in the presidential race, you've got Nikki Haley, who is she did well with Democrats and independents who crossed over in New Hampshire, didn't do as well among Republican voters there. And so, you know, the supporters of Donald Trump felt like this was kind of, you know, this was tampering with the process. The Republicans might want a certain candidate, and non-Republicans are sort of affecting the results. In Texas, this has come up in Texas before, but we had this past week, the Republican Party chair in Texas, Matt Rinaldi, saying, you know, we need a closed primary system. And Republicans, I think, are seriously considering this. We also had it all came up in a weird context, which was that last Tuesday, we had a special election, a Texas House race in North Texas. And you had Jill Dutton, who was kind of aligned with the Speaker of the House in the Texas House, Dade Phelan. And she was running against Brent Money, was supported by Attorney General Ken Paxton, by Ted Cruz, by Governor Greg Abbott, and he got money from Defend Texas Liberty, an ultra-right wing PAC. And she ended up beating him. Jill Dutton won that race. And you had people who were supporters of Money complaining. Ken Paxton actually said this, that Democrats, quote, voted to steal this election for Jill Dutton. Now, this was a special election.
Love that language.
And I think I'd like to think our state attorney general understands how elections work.
Yeah.
I'm just in a good
very
mood today.
Very generous of you.
Positive reinforcement. That's what I'm trying. But
very manipulative.
But in case he doesn't, and I know he listens to our podcast, I want to make it clear that in a special election, anybody can vote. This was not a Republican primary. So anybody is. You had two Republican candidates, so he probably thought Democrats stay out. Right. You have no right to vote in this. But anybody is allowed to vote and people in San Antonio will remember years ago when we had a special election for the Texas Senate, and you had Jose Menendez running against Trey Martinez Fisher. Trey Martinez Fisher, I think, probably had more support among hardcore members of the Democratic base, but Jose Menendez had bipartisan appeal. You had some Republicans voting for him. Were they trying to tamper with the vote? I don't know, but they had the right to vote. It's a special election. So that was kind of ridiculous. But putting that aside, the question of open primaries versus closed primaries, what do y'all think?
I mean, given how tribal the Texas GOP has become, it's actually surprising to me that they still have an open primary. That it's only now that they're talking about a closed primary, keeping the outsiders out and keeping, you know, the party faithful in, and, you know, not bothered by somebody else's consensus.
And how much do we think it varies from state to state and primary election to primary election, but how much do we think this is an issue with people crossing over to vote in other elections, in primaries for parties that they don't belong to?
I'm sure in specific elections in whatever state that it can be an issue. You mentioned the example of New Hampshire, the presidential primary, but, you know, I can't think of a presidential primary on either party which was decided by the votes from the other party.
Yeah.
Usually what happens in this year, the election year, it's in the primaries is that, you know, it is because it's the state legislative race, the state reps race that someone will cross over because they don't want to support, usually to go against an incumbent, a strong incumbent from the other party. But for the most part, I don't see what I like the idea of an open primary. Voting is not stealing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Stealing, you can steal votes.
Yeah.
And that's another thing. That's what, this isn't coming from a good place. It's not coming from an idea of we're concerned about integrity of our elections. It's coming from the same folks who are doing their best to suppress votes.
Absolutely. Yeah. It's a temper tantrum. I mean, they're doing this toddler tantrum thing. They don't want anything to threaten them. It's ridiculous. Well, and they just need to deal with it. It needs to be open. The thing is that people don't vote in the first place. I mean, especially in San Antonio.
That's probably our biggest problem.
They don't vote. That is, they're registered to vote. They don't vote. And especially in the primaries. Mm-hmm. So I'd be shocked to see if locally that would make any kind of difference, because it's the same people voting in the primary every time.
And one of the things that I found, like growing up in the Valley, where most of the local offices were held by Democrats, mm-hmm. but you had, a fair number of conservative voters. There were cases where that I'm aware of where people who were considered themselves Republicans would vote in Democratic primaries mm-hmm. because they liked the local candidates, or they had a preference for a certain local candidate. Right. Maybe they liked the moderate Democrat versus the more progressive challenger, kinds of things. It wasn't like I'm trying to blow up things on the other side.
That's a very good point. Yes.
Take that idea and expand it statewide. I mean, Texas has been a one-party state for more than a quarter of a century. Mm-hmm. Democrats haven't won a statewide seat in forever. So
that's right.
The Republican primaries for statewide offices, that's where the real election is. I mean, that's been our history for a quarter of a century. So if you have strong feelings about who should be the next governor, I mean, typically you're gonna look to the Republican primary.
Yeah. If you live in District 23, which used to be a swing district, but I think we'd all agree is pretty much a pretty solid Republican district at this point, you might want to weigh in and vote there, where you got an incumbent, Tony Gonzalez, mm-hmm. there. You might want to, there are different reasons people have. I mean, the most obvious case that I can think of where somebody was just trying to create mischief, which is what I think some of these Republicans like Matt Rinaldi seem to be concerned about, was in 2008, where you had right-wing radio host Rush Limbaugh looking at the fact that Barack Obama seemed to be kind of running away with the Democratic primary campaign. Mm-hmm. And Texas was coming up, and he was encouraging Republicans to vote for Hillary Clinton in the Democratic primary to slow Obama down, because he thought, as long as you've got these two people fighting it out, it's Democrats aren't going to be united. This is going to help us. So you're helping our side by voting for Hillary Clinton. And as I remember, she did win. It was a weird thing because we had the Texas two-step.
And I still get confused about who won what.
I think she won the popular vote, but he ended up with more delegates. The perception was that she was the winner of that.
But to Greg's point also, I mean, you think of the history, the last 30, 40 years, it's been one party. But before that, it was the other party. It was the Democratic Party, which is why you go back to the white primary, the Democratic primary. It was so important for black voters to get the right to be able to vote in the Democratic primary, because that would decide ultimately who was going to be elected governor, who was going to be elected Senate.
That's true. Mm-hmm.
And I have seen some organizing with teachers. There are like certain Facebook groups and
to vote in the Republican primary?
Groups, yes. And, because they're very unhappy with Abbott and the assaults happening on Texas educators and that party. And so I have seen actual Facebook groups when I was a teacher, and I'd get these invites to these groups and they would say vote for his opponent, like make sure, and I think that they're still around. And so that was that's the only time I've ever witnessed a concerted effort to try to engage and encourage people to vote like that.
The last note I wanted to make about this was looking at this historically, and this is something I've kind of looked into over the years, the 1976 Texas primary, which was, a big one, and it was really kind of it had a lot to do with changing Texas politics, and it had a lot to do with the future of the Republican Party. Mm-hmm. You had Ronald Reagan challenging Gerald Ford, the incumbent, and Reagan won. I'm not saying he wouldn't have won the primary without this, but the margin wouldn't have been what it was without conservative Democrats, George Wallace Democrats, mm-hmm. voting for him. And he sought out their support. And the funny thing about both the Texas primary and the other open primaries during that cycle was that if Republicans now probably looking back at that race between Ford and Reagan would probably say, well, you know, Reagan was the true Republican. He was the conservative Republican. Ford was kind of a rhino. I mean, that would be the perception, mm-hmm. I think. But during that campaign, Ford did really well in the closed primaries where only Republicans could vote. Those were the ones he won. And every time they came up to an open primary, that's where he was in trouble because conservative Democrats would cross over and vote for Reagan. So conservative Democrats saved Reagan and probably enabled him to be able to build on that and run in 1980, and it changed everything.
And in today's Republican Party, especially in Texas, Reagan would be a rhino.
Oh, absolutely. That's
a great point. Reagan is too liberal.
I've thought about that many times lately.
Yeah.
That is
completely changed.
Oh, on that note, we're going to wrap things up. I hope everyone's doing well. We're going to be back again soon, and take care.